Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're going to talk about a fictional presidency today.
That might be the best kind of
talk. Yeah, it might be the very best kind of presidency of all the kinds. Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about a show that I like called The West Wing. You know, I didn't look up when it was even on. My experience on it has always been Netflix. I never watched it when it was on.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was, you know, I think it was 2000 might be when it started, because I was watching the episode from season two and I think it said 2001.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know it was in during George W. Bush's administration.
You know, I didn't look that up, but that does make sense.
Yeah, yeah. And there is some, I like George Bush very much, you know, but there is some themes throughout the show where he's sort of, I don't know, the foil. What do you call the guy on the end of the barbs?
Yeah, the Republican right is right, definitely right in the light of the people talking. But, you know, it's interesting because I wasn't Catholic yet, at least when it started. And not that that necessarily has anything to do with that. We also really loved George Bush. Mm. Both George Bushes, actually. And so that tells you where I am. But the thing is that my husband and I watched this while it was on. Mm. And I'm looking back at this, having watched a couple episodes recently for this, and thinking, my goodness, this was a demanding show. It moved fast. It wanted you to keep up with what they were talking about. You had to be ready to be caught up on political thinking. And they were presenting things from the point of view of a Democratic president. But because the show was so good, at least for the first four seasons under Aaron Sorkin's running it and writing it, at showing both sides, they never gave you one side without at least letting the other side air its point of view. You didn't feel like you were being hammered all the time.
Hmm.
It gave you a lot to think about and talk about. And, you know, we don't have that kind of political dialogue.
No, right, we definitely don't. And I have only watched the first three seasons and half of the fourth.
Okay.
So I haven't seen past that, but I have heard through other people that after season four, it really does become a very left-leaning thing. And I that's just what I've heard. So just, you know, want to throw that out there.
Was our experience.
Oh, was it? Okay, good.
Yeah, so, and that's why we quit watching, because we didn't pay attention at that point in time to who's writing something, who's running something. If you'd have asked us who Aaron Sorkin was, we might not have even recognized his name.
Yeah.
But he left. I was looking this up last night. He wrote 85, or at least co-wrote or touched 85 of the 88 shows in the first four seasons.
Isn't that amazing?
I know.
It's really
amazing.
And then
he left. Mm. And we didn't know that. But partway into the fifth season, we're just like, oh my gosh, can I get hit over the head anymore? It's gotten very uneven.
Mm.
So that was obviously his influence.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, we kind of like Aaron Sorkin around the Good Story area.
I
right?
love him.
Yeah, me too, because we've talked about him before. The Social Network we did.
Yep.
Let's see.
Moneyball is one of my favorite movies. We haven't talked about it yet.
Yeah. Oh, I love Moneyball. That's a really terrific movie.
Yeah. A Few Good Men.
Yeah. Didn't we talk about
Steve Jobs?
Yeah. Steve Jobs is another one, right?
Yeah. I don't think we've talked about anything of his except for the Social
Network. Yeah. Okay. I guess The Social Network is the only one. I was thinking it was two, but I'm looking through that list, but it looks like it's only the one. So yeah. Yeah, I like him a lot. And at this point in his career, you know, so he did a show called, or a movie called The American President.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I forgot that one.
Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah. And that's where this came from, really. And it's interesting, when you hear him talk about that. First of all, you know, you talk about how fast things move. You know, his scripts are at least 40% longer than everybody else's. You know, so for an hour of television, you know, for a movie, I guess it's about, you know, 120 pages for a script, a typical one. And his are like 160.
Yeah, and they say a page a minute, so.
Yeah, but his go faster, right? It's still the same length movie, but the dialogue is super fast moving. And
they talk about a couple things. One is that William Goldman, who's another legendary screenwriter, was his mentor. And Aaron Goldman, William Goldman is always like, yeah, the dialogue is absolute death. You don't want to have just pages and pages of dialogue, but Aaron Sorkin can get away with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're famous for inventing the walk and talk for West Wing because there was so much dialogue. How do you inject something so it's not just two people sitting talking to each other? And that's, you know, the walking through all the little offices and around corners and stopping and sticking your head back in. And I was in awe as I watched, especially the, I think it was the Two Cathedrals one, where they're, you know, all the people who are doing stuff are continually in motion, but it's just in these offices.
Yeah.
But it's what makes it seem dynamic. Also the delivery of the dialogue, but, you know, you're having to keep up with everything.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And Two Cathedrals was a little bit atypical too, because some of it took place in flashbacks, right. So at this point, what I was saying about the American president is the first draft of that script was like 300 pages long.
And it was a bit long anyway.
It was, used
a bit of editing.
Yeah, and Rob Reiner was the director, and he was basically, okay, let's take this thread right here and throw away the rest of it. And the rest of it became the seed for this.
Okay.
For this series, you know, so.
Right.
So before this, I think he did a show called Sports Night.
Yeah, I never saw that.
Been the first one.
It was on cable.
Was it? Yeah.
Which I didn't have. Oh, Studio 60.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I haven't seen that one either.
No, it was only on for one or maybe two seasons. We really liked that one a lot.
Oh, cool.
Behind the scenes of a SNL type show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. But because it was Aaron Sorkin, it wasn't like, you know, because the other show that came on at the same time was, Tina Fey's show. 30 Rock. 30 Rock was great. Cool. It was completely different, of course, from Studio 60. So we had watched Studio 60 while it was on, and then people started going, you're missing something if you don't watch 30 Rock.
Mm.
And 30 Rock was more of a, you know, it was more like a parks and recreation sort of a thing. But
well, that show I loved.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes. But crazier and just different. I mean, it was really good. And so I highly recommend it.
Well, cool. So I got that to look forward to.
Yeah. There you go.
You bet.
We'll never talk about it here. It didn't have that much to it, but it was pretty good.
That's fun. That's fun. Okay. So what I picked for us to talk about was two specific episodes. So the president in this show, and the show is not centered around the president. I think these two episodes, the president plays a very prominent role, but this show is really about the staff of the West Wing. Mm-hmm. And the president is he's one of the ensemble cast. He's one of many. He's not really peripheral, but he's kind of equal with the rest of the people in the West Wing as far as, you know, screen time and character and all that. But his name is Josiah Bartlett, and he is a Democrat, and he's in his first term during these. Mm-hmm. So I picked two shows, and he's also Catholic. Yeah, that was what I was saying at the beginning of this sentence. This very long sentence that I'm saying. Josiah Bartlett is a Catholic, and I picked two episodes in which his Catholicism is sort of on the front burner, at least in one of the threads of the storytelling. So the first one is called take this Sabbath, and it is in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is called Two Cathedrals, which is the very last show in the second season, sort of a cliffhanger show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, you know, so I don't think we can worry too much about spoilers because we're not going to go, we're not going to be able to talk about this much at all without that, especially the second one. But we can do a brief synopsis.
Yeah. And it's on Netflix. So if somebody's listening who wants to watch it, I think for me, it was great, Scott, because people kept popping up and I get like, Bradley Whitford's secretary and he went, oh, her, oh, this person, you know, the president's assistant. Oh, him, you know,
yeah.
I'd forgotten all these characters who I'd loved over the years. And, but I think they make fairly clear what everybody's doing enough that you can just drop in and watch these if you're not worried about connecting every little thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. Yeah. And you could, you know, especially this first one, you know, if you watch Take the Sabbath and it's interesting to you, then yeah, I'd recommend, yeah, watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so the main thread in, Take This Sabbath. That is the title, isn't it? Am I saying it correctly?
Take This Sabbath Day.
Take This Sabbath Day. Okay. Yeah, at the beginning, the president is out of the country. He's on his way back. And there is some high-profile case that ended up at the Supreme Court where someone is going to be executed. The Supreme Court, at the very opening of the show, they rule against the defendant and say, yep, you are going to be executed. So they're appealing to the president. That's their last possible thing that they can do.
Yeah.
Everybody's getting ready to leave for the weekend. And I have no idea if this is true or not. You know, sometimes things come up, you know, and you're like, I wonder if that's really true. But they said, you know, they don't execute people on the Sabbath, and you know, and that's Saturday and Sunday. They're going to do it on Monday at 12:01 a.m. is when this person would be scheduled to be executed. So a lot of the show, well, the show has multiple threads, right? But the main thread with the president is him considering whether or not to grant a reprieve to this defendant, who we never see in the story.
We only peripherally hear about the crime. It's just they say he killed two drug kingpins, and that's all they really say. And later on, then they say, well, he was into drug trafficking. He was into this and that. And he'd been tried in Mexico by a Mexican court. And, you know, so you get a few threads going, oh, okay. It's not like he's a saint or anything.
Right.
The question comes down to, do you take a human life when they have killed somebody?
Right, right. Yeah, and then what's, you know, interesting about it is, well, you know, the whole thing's interesting to me, but, you know, what's interesting about the show is the influence that all of these West Wing folks have on the president and how, you know, I think that this is how, you know, similar to how White House actually works. I know that they worked hard to try to make this sort of an accurate portrayal as far as they go, right? You know, and I'm sure that White Houses work differently depending on who's in there. Each of them have their own points of view, and as happens in a lot of these episodes, some of them have very strong points of view, and they're working hard to get their point of view to be the one that the president decides.
Right.
And so the show moves on kind of through that whole process where you know, folks spending the weekend in the White House trying to put together their case and getting it before the president so that the president has all of their opinions, right?
Well, and so, just a few of them are actually doing that, really, because, you know, Rob Lowe's character, his name I don't remember, he actually could get the president's ear, so he's marshaling his arguments and this and that. But you've got Toby Ziegler, who is the head of communications. That's not what he does. He doesn't go advise the president. He's mm-hmm. the one who says, well, here's where we're going to have the press conference. Here's the message we're going to send out with these things. And so, but because he is a member of the staff, one of the legal people finds out who's trying to get the guy a reprieve. And he goes and talks to his rabbi, who then starts giving a sermon the next day at shul mm-hmm. on the death penalty. And Jews, vengeance is not part of being Jewish and that kind of thing. And I'm listening going, well, in America now, possibly, but I've read a lot of the Old Testament, read a lot of the New Testament. You know, people are people and they apply the law how they want to apply the law. And so I thought it was funny how in this conversation, Toby goes and talks to his rabbi. Kind of to get advice about it. And he then goes back and because he's like, well, I don't have the president's ear. This isn't something I can say. And the rabbi's like, yes, it is. So he actually goes and does it. He kind of goes and delivers the message, which he believes, which is, you know, you shouldn't kill somebody. You shouldn't take vengeance on someone in this way. And so what was kind of interesting about all that is it was being presented as a very pure message, which is how anybody thinks of it when they're, you know, they're kind of discarding the other stuff. Because I was watching this going, well, not being Jewish, but knowing that there are different brands of Judaism, you know, this thing of that he says of, and even though the rabbis couldn't stop, you know, killing somebody for murder, they wrote so many laws that it was virtually impossible to do it. I'm like, really? In every society in the last 2,000 years or whatever? And, you know, and the problem is he kept saying 2,000 years ago. And I'm like, you can, for a Christian, and you don't want to go there, but what you think of is, well, Jesus was crucified and it wasn't the Romans' idea. You know, so all what that shows is it's easy for people to take the law into their own hands when it's in their own interests.
Yeah.
And so all these arguments were being presented very purely. Now, the nice thing was, is that they, the assistant to the president, and I'd totally forgotten this, they did a nice job of kind of updating you briefly, as his mother had been murdered. His mother was a policewoman. And he said, so if they caught the guy who did it, says the president, would you want, you know, the death penalty, or would you want him to be executed? And the guy says, no. And the president's like, yeah. And he goes, I'd want to do it myself. Oh, all right, I'll take that into consideration. So, and you see, is it CJ, the press secretary?
Yep, CJ is the press secretary, right?
Yeah. Who's like, I have zero opinion. They can throw him in jail. They can kill him. I don't care one way or the other, you know, which I found kind of interesting in all these people. She's like, doesn't matter to me. I don't care.
Yeah.
And there are people like that. So it presented every point of view.
Yeah. And that's what I liked about it. You know, throwing that stuff around, but I agree with you on that Jewish point of view, where, you know, it would depend on which synagogue you're in, you know, probably the answer you're going to get, there. So, but you know, that particular one, that particular rabbi had that opinion. Mm-hmm. And shared it with Toby. And then, you know, Toby, you know, that bruise, you know, it's got to be hard to be in the White House so close to the person that makes all these decisions and not feel like you need to talk to that person every day, you know, and get your opinions in there. You know, it's like, you know, this is my opportunity to actually change things. You know, so I found that aspect of it really interesting. And, you know, the influence that people want to have on the influencers, you know, that was interesting too.
Yeah.
So one of the lawyers was like, yeah, I knew this guy in high school. I used to beat him up in high school, I think he said. And that was Sam Seaborn, is the name of Rob Lowe's character. And he says, so yeah, let me try to call him up and see if we can have this one more avenue of appeal, right? So, you know, it's like, you know, who you know. He happens to know somebody there.
Right.
And, you know, I thought that was an interesting aspect to it, too. That rings true to me, you know. You know, people know each other and and they call, mm-hmm. right? So,
right.
But yeah, but that's something. And then, you know, so you said, you know, the Jewish viewpoint was really clear. And then the Jewish view of, you know, his view of the Catholic view of life was clear, you know, as he was yeah. talking to Toby. He says, well, the president's not Jewish, you know, he's not going to listen to me about this anyway. And he said, well, he's Catholic, and Catholics have a pretty strong view of life, you know. Of, so, you know, he says,
Jesus, they're unimpeachable on that.
Right, right. And I thought that was cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, but then when you get to the president himself, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, I can't remember in what context, but, you know, so here you have a Catholic person, and I found it interesting when the priest finally came in, and the priest said, right. you know, what do you want me to call you in here? And he said, I need you to call me Mr. President. And he said, because, you know, I've got to make a lot of decisions in here, and it helps me to think that I'm the office when I'm in here. I'm not Josiah Bartlett when I'm in here. And right. I thought that that was very interesting to me. You know, because I think that's something that, I don't know, in a way, you know, I understand what he's saying, but it's almost like something to be avoided, I think. You know, in, you know, the president is a really special office, right? I mean, I can't think of anything else in the world where so much is expected of a single person. You know, like in England, we have, you know, the prime minister, but we also have the queen, right? So mm-hmm. it's almost like part of that job is split off to the queen. And what the part of the job is the pomp and circumstance and, mm-hmm. and, you know, the representation of the soul of the country, you know, these kind of things. It's almost like two people.
Right.
Right. But in America, that's all this one person, you know, and you can probably think of seven major roles that this person is fulfilling.
But I would say yeah. that attitude of having to keep yourself separate, actually, it's funny that you said that about England. Mm-hmm. As he said that, and I was like, well, yeah, we've been watching The Crown. I absolutely get it. That's a huge struggle that it goes on, and we've only watched the first season, which it's excellent if you haven't watched it.
No, I haven't. And The Crown, okay. The Crown is a series where?
Oh, it's on Netflix.
Okay.
And it's about Elizabeth II.
Okay.
And it starts before she's before her father's dead, so she's not yet the queen. And mm-hmm. it's really good. It's not always exactly factual, but it's close enough. And they're making a lot of points. And one point that gets made continually is, when is she allowed to be a person, and when is it the office? Because the office is what she's there for. That is what serves the people. Her personal interests do not matter. And it's made really clear in an episode about her sister, Margaret, who I won't go into all the history of it, but anybody who's watched it or knows about her flirtation with this one person, the queen is out of the country and Margaret is taking over royal duties at going to various parties and things. And she starts expressing her own opinion and being very clever and funny and all this and that. Well, the problem is she's doing it for her own self, to make herself feel good and to be clever and to show she's better than the queen. Well, the problem is that that's not taken that way. It's not good for the country. It's not good for anyone except her personally. And she never really understands when her sister comes back and says, oh man, you've got to stop this. And they call the mother back to make her cut it out. And so watching Jed Bartlett say, I have to be the president, and watching him struggle with what precedent am I setting, I really loved that part, which is the same part of the same thing. He's like, what about the president after me who may feel very different? What am I opening the door to?
Yeah, he said, you know, we can't execute some people and not execute others based on the mood of the president.
Yeah.
You know, whoever has that office. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he always was, you know, thinking that way in the show. You know, that's
even one of the things they were projecting. Even when his advisor's like, this time, don't worry about the next guy. And he's like, nope, not going to do that.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm just thinking, my thinking there, and it's not clear thinking, my thinking there is, well, if you're, you know, people voted for you, right? They brought, you know, all of your decision-making skills, everything that, that you've have in past experience that made you who you are, is who they want making those decisions. And in this case, you know, he's flirting with a decision that 70% of the people would not agree with, right? So, right. You know, there was a poll that said 70% of America is for the death penalty, and he should just let this be. So he had a political self, right? Mm-hmm. And his political self was saying, okay, the best political thing for me to do is to just let this happen. And I really liked that discussion with the Quaker lady, the deaf lady, who was very emphatic. You know, she was like, I know what I believe, and this is what I believe. And she mm-hmm. was sharing that with the president. And then he says, well, you know, 70% of America believes this. And she says, well, that's a political problem. You know, so she was also right. sort of saying, well, there's, you know, in my opinion, you know, with my baggage, right, I'm thinking, you know, she's saying, well, you know, you're putting politics ahead of what you personally think morally.
And if I don't have a president who does that, I don't want that president, because he's not there to be, he's there to be himself, but he's not there to just do what he wants. He's there for us. He's serving. Yeah,
so that's fascinating.
Us.
So what about something like abortion then?
Well, what do you do? What do they all say? Mm-hmm. We got to get Mendoza on the court.
Right. Yeah.
How do you change it? You change the laws. You change the law, the attitudes of the people. When she says that's a political problem, what I took that as, then you need to help change how the people think. You need to explain to them.
Right, right.
You need to.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I agree with that very, very
that
much.
That kind
yeah.
of a shift, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you look at, I mean, because you look at, that's part of the outrage or approval that you see over Donald Trump's actions, right?
Mm-hmm.
A great number of the people are like, we don't agree with how he thinks or how he expresses himself or whatever. He's being too much himself.
Mm.
We want him to be the president.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he can try to get other people on the court, and he's doing that. Yes, he can try to deal with countries in whatever way seems good for policy, and he's doing that. But he's being so much himself, he's obscuring the office.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's making it so personal. Who can have a conversation about this? Because Trump is always in the room with you.
Mm.
And even the people who might approve of some of the stuff he does, and I approve of some and I don't approve of others, I can't get past the personality part, because if you say, well, I think this might be a good idea, they all go, oh, you like Donald Trump. I'm like, no, I don't really necessarily like that man. And so what Bartlett, I think, is doing here is saying, I can't turn into a Donald Trump for the left.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I hadn't looked at it that way.
Yeah, yeah. I just think, and I might not feel that way if I hadn't seen The Crown and seen her wrestle over and over. So I've had a bit more time to think about that.
Yeah.
But it's like a priest, you know, don't you want we want the priest to wrestle with the Catholic teachings and make sure he understands it, because he's going to have to talk to and advise so many different kinds of people on so many things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yet he's serving God and he's our shepherd. So he's got to express that in those terms, because as a Catholic, you look at this and you go, yeah, the teachings are really from, you know, there's no absolute on the death penalty in Catholic teachings,
mm-hmm. yeah.
because they know you have to express it in terms of what your country can do. If you're in a very poor third world country that has terrible jails and a lot of corruption, you might have to protect the regular citizen by enacting the death penalty to keep these people from getting out and harming other people again.
Hmm.
In this country, you like to think that more of that stuff is locked down, so you don't kill the person, you leave them alive, because this is their chance for personal redemption.
Hmm.
You want to give them every last chance up to the very last minute they're alive. But that's why the church, you know, heavily leans on the side of you really shouldn't kill them if you don't have to, mostly because of this. They're not done working out their redemption yet and their salvation. However, you have to protect the people above this one individual.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting.
And then the way you do that, according to them, is we've got to get Mendoza on the court. And I saw the description for the next episode was, oops, Mendoza's got drunk driving charges because he's Hispanic or something. I mean, so they're going on to some other issue, but we know why Mendoza matters to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the illegal immigration thing. That's the arguments that are going on. You have your sanctuary cities and you have your, and I just look at this and I go, okay, I understand. And we want to treat individuals, you know, with respect and all this stuff. However, this idea of a sanctuary city, you're breaking the federal laws. If you don't like it, fix the laws. You know, as Catholics, the Catholic Church, through Catholic Charities and all this stuff, helps immigrants that they're not asking about this. But shouldn't there, one hopes that what they're doing also is, if you're a legal immigrant, they're helping you get established in the community. They're helping you connect in whatever way you need to. If you're an illegal immigrant, they should be helping you. How do I become a legal immigrant?
Hmm.
How do I change the laws? How do I work for changing the laws so that they allow more of these people to come in or whatever it is, or do they make it easier?
Yeah, yeah.
There are ways to work in the system. You can't solve everything by going, this is what we're going to do right this second.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I've thought that many times where it's like, well, this is the law. You don't get to just not follow that, you know.
Right.
This is against the law. So therefore, that's the path is to change the laws.
Yeah. And so when they show Bartlett wrestling with that, he can, in this one instance, change the law. But what does it mean for the next person he doesn't do it for?
And it would mean that, you know, it would open up the door to everybody who's getting executed will end up on his desk.
Right.
Yep. Yep. That's got to be tough.
Yeah. But does he like it personally? Probably no. And that's why he's going to confess.
Yeah.
But.
So that's just a really interesting aspect of it. You know, this tension between the office and the person.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, to be honest, if it was something else, you know, I would probably have a different point of view. Do you know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. You know, for this, I'm thinking, oh, he ought to express his beliefs. And then in something else, I would say, oh, he probably shouldn't have done it there. You know, so yeah. It's just like, yeah, I don't know. We've all got our own things that we would want, right?
Yeah, and he's expressing his beliefs through all the laws he's trying to get passed or the people he does or doesn't encourage to go further in the party. You know, they kind of make that point with that second thread of the story of the woman trying, who's a campaign manager for a Democrat, where she's like, you're not giving us enough support. You're not giving us enough money. You're not helping us out enough. And they're like, you know, that's not our priority.
Mm-hmm.
We would rather have this other person in place for the Republicans who's so extreme, he's easy to make fun of, and that makes our point for us.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're expressing themselves by maneuvering through the system in that way.
Yeah, which was also interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I like that too, because you had an extreme running against an extreme, and they said, you know, well, we don't really like your candidate.
Yeah.
But that was part of the reason. You know, he is on our side, but he would not help us. You know, he's just too out there, and he's going to make things harder for us. So let's just keep what we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they liked the campaign manager. So just like you were saying, they said, you should run.
Right.
You know, and we'll support you. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah, because what they wanted was people who were genuine. And the president described the candidate she was representing as a stuffed shirt who wasn't really going to do anything for anyone. He was taking a free ride. And he's like, I want people who are doing this with passion and genuine feeling. That's what he was doing. We were just seeing him in a really tough moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, let's move on to the second episode.
Okay.
Yeah. So we were talking. So this one's called Two Cathedrals. And then this one has some spoilery stuff that needs to be understood at the outset. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If you want to be surprised by this stuff, then now's the time to press stop. But at this point, you know, we're at the end of season two. It's been revealed that the President Bartlett has MS, multiple sclerosis, and never told anybody, although he knew. And his wife's a doctor, and that was a cool part of the story, too.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I mean, I'd forgotten
everything. His wife's a doctor, and she was helping him through it. So, you know, which is part of why, you know, after this was revealed, she was getting hammered by, you know, in season three, she's getting grilled by Congress and stuff.
Oh,
it was, you know, to get at Bartlett, they were getting after his wife. So
yeah, well, good luck with that because she is one tough cookie.
Yeah, she was, right. So, anyway, so that was revealed. And also, he had a very, very close, a person that was very close to him, that held a secretary position, but, you know, she was really more than that to him. She was, pretty much a companion through life, through, from college all the way up to the presidency. You know, she was with him, sort of a personal assistant. Yeah. And her name was Mrs. Landingham.
Yeah, kind of an advisor and friend, of course.
But. Right, right. Mm-hmm. And she died in a car accident an episode or two before this one. So then this is the very end of the very last show in season two. So he's getting really attacked politically for keeping this a secret. So there's like a grand jury investigation, I believe, of his wife, if I remember right.
Right. Yeah. Something so, like that. Yeah.
So things are happening there. And then he loses this person that's really close to him. So he's having an extremely difficult time. And he's trying to decide whether to run again or not. You know, so here he is, the head of the party. And the very opening scene of this episode is a couple of, they look like the older Democrats in the chief of staff's office, trying to tell him that the president ought not run. And, so he's getting that from his own party, you know, he's losing support pretty much across the board. And, oh, you know what? Sorry. In that other episode, I hate to jump back, but I was just reminded of one moment that I really loved in that.
Do it.
Okay. Sam Seaborn, he said, he said, right at that moment, it seemed like what I should do. So he told this lawyer where Toby went to synagogue.
Yeah.
And that is something that you would never, ever do, right? You know, there's a mutual respect among the staff. It's like, you know, you don't give my personal phone number out. You don't give where I live out, you know.
You know,
because people are trying to get at them. They're people all over. But I really loved that moment. He said, well, right at that moment, it seemed like what I should do. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was sort of one of those, God kind of moving everybody into place, you know, in this episode, sort of influencing everybody to try to be in the right place at the right time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because you did see when it was happening, I was like, wow, I can't believe you just said that. But it was kind of like it wasn't calculated.
Right.
Or controlled, which is a lot of what, you know, you could see from Sam.
Yeah.
You knew what he was doing. And this was just kind of like, well, I think it's on Delaware. It's, you know, he's just kind of doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Without thinking about it much.
Yeah. Anyway, I really liked that moment. I thought it was pretty cool. So anyway, I'm sorry that leaped into my head at that moment while I was describing the second episode.
We can handle it. We've been watching West Wing. We're used to going back.
That's right. And it goes at light speed. At light speed. okay. So yeah, in the two cathedrals then, he is, and by he, I mean President Bartlett, he's being attacked from all sides. And some of the events that take place in there are him going to the funeral of this woman, and flashbacks to when he first met her and how she became an influence on him, and some difficult stuff with his father in the what do you call it, boarding school or whatever, I guess. It was a Protestant boarding school.
The private school.
A private school. Yeah, a private religious school, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't Catholic. So I guess Bartlett's mom was Catholic and his dad was not. I'm not sure. I don't know what denomination.
Well, and they do, because one of the things that he keeps bringing up was he's very sensitive to the nuances of things. And you can see that because he keeps throughout the flashbacks, he keeps going, that wasn't a non-denominational service. Mm. And he's like, it was too. And they're like, well, not if you were Jewish.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he goes, not for Catholics. The Our Father doesn't, you know, they're like, oh, the Our Father is like this. And he goes, no, the Our Father doesn't have this bit in it. And I'm like, okay, also, sorry to whoever missed this, you wouldn't call it the Our Father. It's the Lord's Prayer if you're Protestant.
Hmm. Interesting.
And it's funny because I said that and Rose went, I didn't know that. I was like, well, I do. Catholics call things by the first couple of words. But anyway, but the other thing I wanted to mention is in the middle of this horrible, awful, terrible, not very good day he's having, there's also a standoff at the Haitian embassy.
Mm, that's right.
Over the newly elected president. So there's a very tense political situation, or, you know, military situation down there. I mean, there are literally people with guns and mortars right outside the door. There's a huge tropical storm moving up the East Coast at an unseasonable time of year that looks like it's going to really do a lot of destruction. So it's one of those things where, you know, this confluence of terrible outside events is happening at the same time as he is experiencing great personal loss that he can't, he doesn't have any time to react to it and deal with it.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to throw this
in. Yeah, please. Yeah, that was great.
Sorry I broke them.
Yeah. No, because that is definitely part of it. Definitely part of it. So, So the big Catholic scene in this, I guess, well, there's two of them in my opinion, but the things that touched me in a religious way were his anger at God expressed in the cathedral, in the National Cathedral. So after the funeral, everybody clears out, and he asks the chief of staff to close the doors for a minute so that he's alone. And then he has a little chat with God in which, you know, he expresses, you know, great anger.
He tells him how the cow ate the cabbage.
What does that mean?
It's just an expression. It's like,
I've never heard that
really?
One.
Let me just tell you how the cow ate the cabbage. And then I just lay it out there for you.
Oh, my gosh.
God, yeah. You huge jerk.
Right.
Never heard that.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah. So he lets God have it. In Latin, even.
I was wondering what that language was. I thought maybe it was Spanish, but no, whatever it was.
It was Latin. It was Latin.
Okay.
And I actually looked it up to find out what it means, but it means probably what you thought it means. You know, it's
I
just
meant
like,
to,
you
know, but
just
I
go
don't
to
know
hell, you know, the kind of thing.
You're the worst.
You're the worst. You know, just thanks a bunch was one of the lines.
Yeah.
Thanks Lord.
For nothing.
Yeah. Way to go. You know, but I liked that moment. Because, you know, and there is a lot of baggage there that you get to, you know, it's one of the things when you watch a single episode, you know, things build up. So you have a lot of backstory that, you know, isn't in this episode,
mm-hmm.
A lot of things built up. So he has in a very satisfying way, in my opinion, the show brought him to that spot.
Mm-hmm.
And he let her rip, right? So, but you know, it was sort of a Job like, you know, here, you know, I'm all this stuff is happening. You're doing this, and basically, coming to the understanding. Maybe I don't know. They weren't very explicit, you know. But you know, as a Catholic, you know, you can understand that. You know, we don't understand God, right? And all of that stuff that comes with that, you know, whatever's happening there, right? So, he let it go, you know, or he let it out, I guess I should say.
Well, I like the thing, too, if it's kind of, it's not exactly like Job, but it's close enough because he's like, what, 3.5 million new jobs or whatever, 30 million new jobs aren't enough for you. This stuff I did isn't enough for you. So it's in a sense, it's paralleling the idea that Job had of, I haven't done anything wrong. I've been a good person.
Right. Right.
There's no reason for me to be punished like this.
Exactly. Yep.
And I did like that. And then of course they have exquisitely, perfectly set up the moment of final contempt when he lights a cigarette and then drops it and puts it out on the floor, you know?
Yeah, and then says, you get hoins, right? Which is him saying, I'm out.
His vice president, who's not great.
Exactly. He's saying, this is what you want, you know? Yeah. This is what
I'm
you leaving. Got.
I'm out. I'm mm-hmm. done. I'm not running.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And good luck with that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then, of course, what just the same way, it's interesting, you know, now that you mentioned Job, and I'm thinking about God coming to him in, and isn't it in a big burst of wind or something?
Mm. Yeah.
But you know,
and then you got the storm.
The door blows open. Right, yeah, that door keeps blowing open. And then God talks to him in the shape of
That's exactly
way.
Right. That's exactly right. And that, you know, when there is a scene then at the end where he is now alone and he's in the Oval Office and it's at a very low point, right? And the door blows open again.
He's like, with the wind,
right? With the wind, right? And he says what he would normally say. You know, he would yell for Mrs. Landingham.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes in, right? Even though she's passed away. And that's, mm-hmm. and that, you know, to me, that's communication with God.
Yeah.
Right? And she tells him some stuff. I just like the way, I've always liked the way she talked to him. It was always, you know, great. And she did so here too, right? She did the same thing. But in there, it's like, well, if you don't want to run, you know, I can understand that. But if you don't want to do it because it's too hard, you know, then God, I don't even want to know you, right? The phrasing was just well done.
Right. And it calls back to the flashback when they first get to know each other. So that's really effective. And she walks in and she goes, "You know, God doesn't cause car accidents. Yeah, and you know it.
That's right.
You know, like, get over it now. You've had your moment of pity and grief and everything.
You've done your yelling. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's reminded, you know, it's like back to basics, right? You know, which is what in life we have to do sometimes. It's like, now, if you could throw all this stuff out, you know, forget about everything for a minute, then why are you doing what you're doing?
Yeah.
Remember what it is. Why are you here, right? And that's what she's doing for him. You know, she says, okay, take all this stuff away. Why are you here, right?
Yeah.
And he remembers why he's here. And, then that affects the rest of it. Yeah. And then in comes Mark Knopfler.
Wants to fix. Yeah. And help. And
Right. But I thought it was very powerful and very well done. And then the music comes up, Brothers in Arms by Dire Straits. And, the rest of it is just super well shot. I thought, you know, I just love that scene. Yeah. So in fact, Aaron Sorkin said in that script, in his head came that music and that scene with the walking. And he was like, okay. And then he wrote the rest of it. So it was the first thing that occurred to him was, this. And then
here's the end.
Right. Here's the end. You know, and he saw that in his head and he was like, okay, so I've got the rest.
I did love that he's been out in the rain and he's soaking wet and all this. And I'm like, does no one have a towel? And then at that moment, his assistant's like, okay, I can wipe my face off.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
Fine. And the moment I loved was when Leo, his chief of staff, they're standing watching on the cameras and he puts, and we've been queued up already. When you put your hands in your pockets, says Mrs. Landingham when she's young, and turn your head to one side and smile a little, I know that means you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we see him put his hand in his pocket and I'm like, oh my gosh, he's going to turn his head. And at that moment, they show us Leo who's watching it on the monitors and he just gets this look on his face of, it's just so subtly done and so beautiful of it's happening. Mm-hmm. He's like, watch this. You guys watch this. And they all turn their heads and look. And then we see it too. And we don't hear the answer if you're going to run again, but we know what the answer is.
Right.
You know, and it's a very powerful moment because we see the culmination of all that he's been through that day.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Love it. Thought it was just really good. And then this show, you know, it highlighted CJ in a nice way too. I think CJ might be my favorite character in this show.
She's great, isn't she?
It's just unbelievable. You know, and again, assuming that this is sort of true to life, you know, what a press secretary does, but unbelievable for someone to be. I just have a lot of respect for that position. You know, because of you know what they're asked to do. all the time. And for her, you know, it's just like being on constantly.
Right.
And trying to keep all this stuff in your head, trying to figure out, you know, people kept giving you stuff. This is what needs to be said, you know. So sometimes in the show, Toby would come, you know, and while she's walking towards the room, you know, the walk and talk, mm-hmm. he's telling her what she needs to say when she's in there. You know, we need to spin this way. So I need you to say it this way. You know, and then for her to remember all that and go out there and just do it. And then they play on that a little bit. I remember a particular funny moment where Josh was in the hospital and he phoned in a thing and he said, you know, physicists at Caltech have discovered something and we want to talk about that. And she says, I'm not talking about that. And then anyway, she goes out there and then, you know, he's watching on TV from his hotel room and she says, psychics at Caltech have done this. And then she, you know, and then she stops and she goes, I'm pretty sure I was supposed to be physicists.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it kind of plays on that. It was funny. So yeah, I just love her scenes most of the time and just think she's great.
Well, and it was showing a lot of that. Sam keeps wanting to cancel the press conference for that evening. He's like, it's too much. They can't cancel it, as it keeps getting pointed out. We've scheduled time on network news. And also, Toby's can, like, they've got to light him from the back. If they don't light him from the back, it's not going to. So these are the small mundane things that we don't think about. And so for me, the thing that CJ was doing that I really liked is you don't think about how they want to give you time to kind of settle in. Mm. So she's like, so ask this doctor. He's the first one who will be allowed to ask you, you know, ask him for the question first. He'll ask you about some medical stuff. So you can kind of answer that. He'll have two or three follow-ups. It will allow you to kind of settle in and calm down and kind of the room will quiet down a little bit.
Right.
And so you can kind of think and get a hold of things. And of course, we know that he's not going to do that. But she is going, and who are you going to ask first? And where is he sitting? On who's right? On my, and she's doing it very respectfully.
Yeah.
She's like, I have to make sure you understand this. This has been set up for your benefit. And I was like, I never thought about all that maneuvering and the positioning and all that.
It's got to be amazing to be president, you know, because, you know, let's just say an 8-hour day. I know their days aren't longer than that, but let's just say if you have an 8-hour day and they're scheduling stuff like, you know, okay, from 8 to 8:15, you're doing this. From 8:15 to 8:30, you're doing this. And that's one of the things Aaron Sorkin said, that, you know, he was talking about research, and he said that the gold was somebody found him these day books from a number of different presidents, and that's what it was full of. It was like,
oh, really?
You know, yeah, from 8 to 8:10, you know, I mean, their day is scheduled just like to unbelievable, you know, amounts. But all of these people are making this stuff happen. So all the president has to do is walk into the room, sit down, and do a 10-minute interview, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then he gets up and he goes to the next room, and his staff has set up that. And now the room's full of, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles, right?
Yeah.
And then he goes in there and he talks. He hangs out with them for 15 minutes. And then he goes to the next room, and in there is, you know, Democrats and Republicans that are trying to hammer out some tax thing. You know, or whatever. And it's just unbelievable. You know, I don't know how a person maintains that.
Yeah.
But all the things that go on in the background, you know, that the West Wing people do is just something else.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
But I love it. It's like, you know, when I watch this show, it really energizes me. Most of the episodes, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It makes, you know, it just like, yeah, you know, ah, I want to go, you know, sometimes you watch a show and you want to go hit something, right? But now you watch West Wing and it's like, oh, I want to go do something.
Yeah.
It has a positive effect on me, I think.
Yeah. Well, like I say, it's this it's undiluted dose of Aaron Sorkin for one thing. And that's just, you've got to be on your toes. You got to keep up with that.
For sure. Yeah.
So it's called Two Cathedrals.
Mm, yeah.
And he goes to the National Cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other cathedral?
Yeah. And I've thought about that too. I don't have a clear answer. I don't know. I think that the other cathedral is him in front of the press. What is your thought?
I think it's the presidency.
The presidency itself. Okay.
Yeah, because the question is he going to run again? Mm-hmm. Everything that's revolving around it is, I don't know.
Yeah.
How to present him, how to, you know, the decisions he makes.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know for sure either. But, you know, I did think about it. It's like, okay. But I think your answer and my answer are similar. So we must be on to something.
What pops to mind when I think about that is the very carefully set up shot toward the end of the janitor washing the floor of the National Cathedral and coming to the cigarette butt that he stamped out and picking it up and looking at it.
Yeah.
And as he does so, we can see through the doors and he turns to look at the sirens that are escorting the president to the press conference.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a very clear, here's what I said, here's what I'm doing.
Right, right.
You know, I'm not gonna turn my back on you.
Right, right.
Yep,
super good moment. But that's an example of Aaron Sorkin not really caring about, how am I going to phrase this? It's like he'll bend facts, he'll bend things for effect, right? Mm-hmm. Even if it's, you know, like if he's doing the Social Network or whatever. So, you know, with somebody's life who's real, and I understand President Bartlett isn't real, you know, he'll use that person's life, but he's really trying to get like the tone of their life, right? It's not, you know, step by step, this is exactly what happened. It's like, this is what this person was like, and I'm trying to portray what this person was like. I'm not giving you a blow by blow history. The only reason I say that is because the National Cathedral is nowhere near where they would have been.
Oh,
you know, when they drove by, there was just no, you know, they would have had to go way out of their way to do that.
Right, because when you're telling something...
But it's a powerful moment. Absolutely.
Yeah, when you're telling something using visual symbolism, can't worry about the accuracy of, you know, here are the facts. There's the facts and the truth, right?
Right.
We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
He's telling a truth, but he has to show it in a way that it strikes us.
Right.
Why do we remember that? We remember it because we're supposed to see and compare these two moments from his life.
Yeah, exactly right.
Purposeful.
Yep. Yep.
After he was so angry at God and scornful of him and everything else and turned his back on him, and you get Hoynes or whatever the guy's name was.
Yep, yep.
And we've seen that happen, you know, the Social Network. A lot of license was taken. Steve Jobs, a lot of license taken. But I think Aaron Sorkin gets really interested in these questions of, I think people's lives and situations make him think of questions he's interested in, maybe is a better way to put it. And then he starts poking at it, using this person's life to kind of illustrate the ways he's looking at the question.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I agree.
Yeah.
And he does a good job. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy everything. I haven't seen his latest. The latest is called Molly's Game, I think.
Yeah.
And he actually directed that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And we have it in the house. We're probably going to watch it this week.
Very nice. Yeah. Let me know.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah, but I'll, Mm-hmm. Definitely watch it.
Yeah, but West Wing is interesting, and it's funny because watching these two episodes didn't make me want to watch more of it necessarily, but it did remind me of how nice it is to have something where you're shown a lot of different points of view, and the show has its own point of view very clearly, but it really kind of just opens up issues and questions to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And they expect you to be smart. You can keep up with this. You can follow this. We're going to tell you from five different directions what this question is. By the time we're done, you're going to understand what's going on. And they're not babying you necessarily. And I don't think we have anything like that on right now that I can think of.
I can't either, but I haven't watched a heck of a lot.
No,
well. Yeah, that I oh, look at this. Okay, I was just checking because I haven't looked for a while, but I did read probably about 6 months ago just rumors about a reboot. And it wouldn't be so much a reboot as a kind of a continuation.
Of West Wing?
Of West Wing, where Aaron Sorkin would do West Wing again. basically, you know, new president, you know, that stuff happened, but now we're in the next thing. But anyway, it says here, and so I just typed that in there. I typed West Wing reboot, and it says, let's see. It says, I keep saying to him, do you want to do the West Wing again? Wouldn't it be great to do it? He says, you know, I love that show, and someday I'd love to revisit it, but it's not going to happen right now. He says, well, as it turns out, someday might be coming sooner than you think, just as soon as Aaron Sorkin feels he has the right idea. So it sounds like, just from this little article, that maybe the door is open, and he just needs to walk through it if he wants to.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
who doesn't want Aaron Sorkin to do a TV show for them?
Yeah, no question.
Yeah, I mean, and the way TV is now, you know, I can see Amazon and Netflix and various other, you know, and all the networks going, we'll do it, we'll do it, we'll do it.
Yeah, no question. You
know, because in one way, of course, there's so much TV out there now, but in another way, it's bad because it's hard to find it. You don't hear about it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it can be hard to know when something's on if it's not Netflix or Amazon.
Yeah. You know, it's got to be so hard. I remember John Cleese, you know, with, did you ever watch Fawlty Towers?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I just absolutely love that show. It's just like, you know, those scripts are just like gems, every single one of them. You know, I think there's 12 shows. And I read his book, so anyway, but I think it was in there where he was talking about, you know, he gets asked all the time, you know, once you do something, you know, do a movie or do something. And he's like, no, you know, Fawlty Towers is what it is. And anything that I do now is going to be compared to that. And, you know, anything other Fawlty Towers I do. And it's just not going to be that. You know, that was like this perfect storm of, you know, however this creativity thing happened. And, you know, how do we know how that happens? But there's just no way that he just can't see that being a success, you know? And I wonder if with this same thing, you know, like with the West Wing, there's just, you know, there was some really amazing stuff that happened there. And then to try to catch that again, I don't know. He'd have to really, really want to, right? He'd have to be just thinking that, you know, oh, I just love the show and I just really want to do it again.
I think you'd have to feel like he had something new to explore and say. And I feel like four seasons probably explored and said maybe everything you needed to say there.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Mm-hmm. But maybe he'll do it. Yeah. I'd watch.
Well, I probably would. It's Aaron Sorkin. But I don't know if I'd be very enthusiastic about it just because West Wing has been done.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe he could do something new with it.
Yeah, yeah.
He can always surprise me.
For sure, for sure.
So it was good to revisit it.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, cool. Anything else you'd like to say about these? So I think I'm good.
I think we covered it.
All right.
For me.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for watching those.
No, I enjoyed, like I said, Blast to the Past.
And you bet.
All those actors and that I'd forgotten, like I said, how fast-paced it was. And it really does pull you in and make you think about the issues. So, really good.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, good. Good, good, good. All right. So next up, we're going to science fiction.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember how old this book is. 80s, I think. Right?
I think it is.
Yeah, Game of Fox and Lion. By Robert R. Chase.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
And it's funny, I started rereading it last night, and it's written in the 80s, but it kind of feels almost like a, not exactly like Dune, but it made me think of Dune.
Really? Good.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of political stuff and all that kind of thing in there.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And monks. Scott.
Monks. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Monks and science fiction. Two of my very favorite things.
Let's hope so.
All right. That's great. All right. Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.